Welcome to the Weekend Messages podcast from Outpost Church Ministries and Pastor Philip Gonzalez. Our mission is to drive back the darkness by helping people flourish for the glory of God, and we hope this message helps you do just that. We'd love to get to know you, so visit us online at outpostchurch.org to find more ways to connect, give, and grow. And remember, you matter to Jesus, so you matter to us. And if you're in Christ, then you are an outpost of the kingdom of God.
Years ago, I played soccer. I didn't play it amazingly, but I didn't play it terribly. Didn't become an all-star, didn't get a scholarship to college. But I played it, and I enjoyed it. Soccer was one of those games for me that I enjoyed for two reasons. Number one, there was lots of activity, and you may have noticed I tend to like activity. The second thing I liked was it was hard enough to be interesting, but not so hard that I got, permanent brain injuries. For instance, American football has been known to cause significantly more injuries than most soccer players, at least players at my age. Now, you may be wondering about the photo on the screen. You may notice that that is not me in the red at the interesting little juxtaposition of a green player and a red player. That's actually my brother, Christopher. Now, Christopher did give me permission to use this photo, and I would have used a photo of myself, but we didn't have one handy, and I didn't feel like going and digging through boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes. Can anybody relate to that? Yeah. Before we go on real quickly, Ray, would you, in ProPresenter, click the Clear Backgrounds link at the top, please, in the menu item there. Why do I bring up soccer? What is the deal with soccer? Well, here's the thing about soccer. If you're going to have a game and you want to win, you need some rules, right? You need some sort of a structure in which to run. And so what I found out was that we could say it this way. If you're taking notes, write this down. Boundaries are blessings that help you succeed. See, here's the thing that was so important in the game of soccer. You had to know where out of bounds was, right? In fact, switching back to the American football analogy, I never played football. This doesn't surprise you if you know me. I'm not exactly a big sort of fellow. But in watching football, I'm always amazed at the brilliance of having an out of bounds, because consider college football, right? Some poor kid has got the ball and he's running with it, and now a 270-pound linebacker is about to dislocate his shoulder. But as long as he steps out of bounds, let's be honest, he might still get hit, right? But it's a better chance. The boundaries are there not to inhibit the players, but to provide a structure so they can succeed. Now, why do I bring this up? Well, that attitude of understanding that boundaries are blessings that help you succeed was the attitude that was held by the majority of the Jewish people at the time of Jesus in regards to the law of God. See, the Jewish people knew that God had provided the law for them in a very real way, not to hold them back, but to lift them up, to provide boundaries that help them succeed. If you have a Bible, turn to Psalm 119. It's smack dab in the middle of your Bible. And Psalm 119 is the, last I checked anyway, longest chapter in the entire Bible. And it is full of one focal point: the law of God. And it loves it. In fact, let me read you the first 8 verses just to give you a taste. There are 176 verses. We're not reading 176 verses. Can I get an amen for that, right? I sound like my dad. That's okay. So, Psalm 119, verses 1 through 8. Watch this. The psalmist writes this. He says, "How happy are those whose way is blameless, who live according to the law of the Lord. Happy are those who keep his decrees and seek him with all their heart. They do nothing wrong. They follow his ways. You have commanded that your precepts be diligently kept. If only my ways were committed to keeping your statutes, then I would not be ashamed. When I think about all your commands, I will praise you with a sincere heart. When I learn your righteous judgments, I will keep your statutes. Never abandon me." So does that sound like the writing of a person who feels the law is holding him back and restricting his freedom? No. In fact, there's another passage later on. I have it on the screen. It's verse 32. I love this. Now, the psalmist writes this. I love how the ESV translation renders it. It says, I will run in the way of your commandments when you enlarge my heart. I will run in the way. It's like that soccer player discovering there is a ton of freedom within the boundaries. The answer to enjoying the game isn't skirting the edge of the boundaries, being upset that you can't go farther. It's embracing the area you've been given. And so with that context of understanding how Jesus' first listeners would have heard this idea about the law, I want to share with you a message tonight as we continue our series called The Jesus Revolution. The message I want to bring you tonight is called, Don't Let Your Heart Get Hollow. Tell your neighbor, don't let your heart get hollow. And we're going to, yeah, there you go. Now, we're going to look at Matthew chapter 15, verses 17 through 37. And as you turn there, Matthew 5, just cut the one off the front. That's fine. Turn to Matthew 15 like, this has nothing to do with the message. Matthew 5, we're going to start in verse 17. Just a real quick review. We are in a series called The Jesus Revolution, 8 ancient teachings from the Sermon on the Mount that can change our world today. Week 1, we talked about the blessed life. And just by a quick show of hands, who would like to have a blessed life? Right? Everybody. Bad news, if you didn't raise your hand, you won't get one. Bummer. Okay, that's not true. I'm just kidding. But two things we looked at in that first message. Number one, we discovered that God's blessing isn't just about outward results. It's the power of an inward reality, that you can still be blessed even when your circumstances don't feel the way you want them to be. But we also found out in week 1 that living in God's kingdom means letting go of yours, that if we truly want to experience the blessing of God, we come and we receive it on His terms, and that means letting go of our kingdoms. Week 2, last week, we discussed light and salt, salt and light. And we discovered that the steps you choose to take determine the change you get to make. When we look at our world and we see things, gosh, I wish this were different. When we look at our own lives and see things, oh, I wish this were different. We can sit back and hope for change, like we sang in the John Mayer song, waiting on the world to change. But if you really want to see change, well, we need to take steps, because the steps you choose to take determine the change you get to make. But we discovered also last week that the more you grow in love with Christ, the more He makes you salt and light. We explored that last week. But tonight we explore the Sermon on the Mount, verse 17 in Matthew chapter 5. Hopefully by now you have enough time to pull it up. Let's take a moment and read. And I want to read, we're going to go through a whole 20 verses tonight. Don't worry, we're not going to chew on all of them equally long. But I want to start with verses 17 through 19. Now, remember what I told you earlier, that the Jewish people had a specific relationship with the law of God. At least most of them did. So listen now to what Jesus says in Matthew 5, starting in verse 17. He says this, Don't assume that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For I assure you, until heaven and earth pass away, not the smallest letter or one stroke of a letter, other translations say, not a jot, not a tittle, will pass from the law until all things are accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of these commandments and teaches people to do so will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commandments will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. So pause there. Now, what's he talking about? Well, when you see in Scripture this phrase, the law and the prophets bound together, typically that is a Jewish euphemism for the whole Old Testament, the Torah, as they would have known it. Now sometimes the context will show that it's maybe one specific prophet or a specific law, but in this case, Jesus is bundling them all together, and he's talking about the Old Testament instruction of God. And remember, that there, I told you that there were people who would have embraced this idea, but in fact, the first people who heard this teaching of Jesus, there were actually two groups. The first group would have been happy to hear that Jesus is saying, I didn't come to do away with the law. The law is still good. They would have been happy because they knew that boundaries are blessings that help you succeed. But there's another group that would have heard this saying of Jesus that probably would have been disappointed. See, by this time that Jesus had been speaking, we find elsewhere in the parallel account in Luke, the Sermon on the Plain, we find that before this time, he has been doing some things that have been shaking up the religious establishment. He's been violating their traditions of the Sabbath, right? Not God's intention for the Sabbath, but he's been violating the religious traditions of the Sabbath. And he's been doing some things that are making the religious people a little uncomfortable. And the not-so-religious people are really liking this because they love seeing a good religious person get put in their place, right? But this group may have heard Jesus say, I haven't come to do away with the law. I wonder if they might have been a little disappointed because perhaps they were beginning to think that they wouldn't have to worry about any rules anymore. But see, here's the thing that Jesus knows that we always have to remember. Watch this. When you throw off restraint, you go off the rails. See, the rules are here for a purpose. The law is here for a purpose. When you throw off restraint, just do whatever the heck you please without any sense of boundaries, you go off the rails. Perhaps you've known someone in your life who has come to a place when they've decided they didn't want to be restrained anymore and they have begun to make choices that have put them on a downward spiral towards destruction. Maybe you have been in a place in your life when you've decided you didn't want to be bound by the old ways that you had grown up with and you wanted to go off and do your own thing, but you found out that that way only leads, well, we could say it this way, that there is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to what? Death and destruction. When you throw off restraint, you go off the rails. See, Jesus isn't saying, do whatever you want. He knows that commandments matter, but watch this, just not in the same way they used to. See, when Jesus says he fulfills the law, that means he brings to conclusion the first purpose of the law. But he highlights another purpose for the law, and he is about to take the whole thing deeper. Tell your neighbor, let's go deeper. Let's go deeper. Let's go deeper. Interestingly enough, two groups of people. One group would have heard him say, I didn't come to do away with the law, but to fulfill it, and they would have been excited because they love the law. The other group would have heard Jesus say, I didn't come to do away with the law, but to fulfill it, they would have been disappointed because they despise the law. But interestingly enough, what Jesus is about to do is take both of those groups and give them quite a surprise. You ready? All right, two of you. You ready?
Ready.
All right, very good. All right, go ahead and move on forward. What we're going to look at now is Matthew 5, start verse 20. And here's his big, boom! For I tell you, says Jesus, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, knowing our congregation here, I know you guys all know who the scribes and Pharisees were, but in case someone's listening to the podcast and they don't, the scribes and the Pharisees were the most righteous, quote-unquote, people in all of Jewish tradition. They were the most religious. They devoted their lives to following God's commandments to the smallest letter. And so what Jesus is saying is something that would have been shocking to the people. In fact, probably for most of them, they would have been feeling a bit of despair because they would think, what the heck? I can't be more righteous than that. That's like saying, you know, unless you can slam dunk better than Shaquille O'Neal, you can never enter the kingdom of heaven, right? Like, I know all you guys, ain't nobody going to slam dunk better than Shaquille O'Neal, right? I'm not talking about LeBron James. I should have said LeBron James. He's more current, right? Showing you how little I pay attention to basketball. There would have been a sense of despair, but here's an interesting note. When Jesus says, unless your righteousness surpasses, that word surpasses, it can mean a matter of degree, right? So you have to do more righteous stuff. But in this context, it actually implies not a matter of degree, like how much righteousness, but a matter of kind, what type of righteousness it is. In fact, I can show you this with an illustration. Next slide. These are two rounds of ammunition. Now, I know that not everyone is a gun fan, but that's okay, you don't have to be. I am. In fact, I actually own two guns that shoot these. On the right-hand side is a 22 long rifle round, very small. Anybody ever shot a 22 rifle before? Right? If you think about, that's kind of, a lot of kids grew up that way. 22, small bullet, small round, small impact. Now, to the left, interestingly enough, is a bullet, the piece in the tip. It's about the same size. It's actually, they're both 0.22 inches in diameter, but that is a 5.56 NATO round. That's the kind of round that you put in an AR-15 assault rifle, which could, you may or may not be a gun person, but can we just agree that a 22 squirrel shooter and an assault rifle are two totally different things, right? Right, watch this. They are both bullets. In fact, they're both similar bullets, but one of them is a kind that packs a bigger punch. Right. Here's what Jesus is not saying. When he says your righteousness needs to surpass the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, he's not saying you need to get more 22 bullets. He's not saying you need to get more of the little stuff. He's saying you don't need more religious rules. You need to get a better round. You need to get something with more power, more punch, more potency that's actually going to take you over the top. So that said, move on, keep going in the passage. And what Jesus is going to do now is he's going to give four illustrations about what he actually means. Now, in the Sermon on the Mount, he actually gives a total of six illustrations, but we're going to look at the last two next week. Tonight I want to focus on four. And again, if you've grown up in church, you've probably heard these. My goal is to try to thread the needle and perhaps uncover something different for us tonight. So that said, let's go ahead and read the passage, and we're going to find four illustrations of this idea that you need a righteousness that's greater in kind than religion. Let's see what Jesus has to say. We'll read the whole passage for you. You have heard it said to our ancestors, do not murder, and whoever murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you, everyone who is angry with his brother, by the way, many reliable manuscripts also insert without cause. Your translation may or may not have that, but that's a valid addition. Who is angry with his brother without cause will be subject to judgment. And whoever says to his brother, fool, or raka, will be subject to the Sanhedrin. But whoever says, you moron, will be subject to hellfire. Now, I don't know if you grew up with siblings or not, or how your relationship with them is, but maybe some of you are a little uncomfortable right now, right? I don't know. I've said some things. So, verse 23, if you are offering your gift on the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled with your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Reach a settlement quickly with your adversary while you're on the way with him, or your adversary will hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you will be thrown into prison. I assure you, you will never get out of there until you have paid the last penny. Verse 27, you have heard it said, do not commit adultery. But I tell you, everyone who looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away, for it is better that you lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away, for it is better that you lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Verse 31, it was also said, whoever divorces his wife must give her a written notice of divorce. But I tell you, everyone who divorces his wife, except in the case of sexual immorality, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Verse 33, again, you have heard that it was said to our ancestors, you must not break your oath, but you must keep your oaths to the Lord. But I tell you, don't take an oath at all, either by heaven, because it is God's throne, or by the earth, because it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, because it is the city of the great king. Neither should you swear by your head, because you cannot make a single hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no be no. Anything more than this is from the evil one. Now, What Jesus just did is break down the surface of the commandments that the people thought they knew to reveal something underneath and invite people to a deeper way. So he wants to take it deeper. Tell your neighbor, take it deeper. Take it deeper. Now, before we go on, I want to show you a picture that I found on the internet. This is a couple of headlines here about this. One headline, this is the Washington Post, said this, rare as winning the lottery, new dinosaur fossil so well preserved it looks like a statue. Now, this was a distillation of a larger article from National Geographic. This is one of the headlines of the National Geographic article. This is the best dinosaur fossil of its kind ever found. Next slide. This is called a notosaur. And you know, I don't know how well you can see it on the screen, but it is, like, that's a fossil. That's not something that was created in a character or a creature lab in Hollywood. There were lots of other photos, but I figured we wouldn't take all the time to look through every one. If you want to see the article, let me know. I'll email it to you. But this fossil was found March 21st, 2011, by a man named Sean Funk, which is a killer name, by the way. Just have to say, I wish my name was Funk. All right, who brings the funk? His mom does. He doesn't have a license. It's just, she brings. Okay, when he was a kid. All right, he's a heavy equipment operator at the Millennium Mine in Fort McMurray in the Alberta province of Canada. And on March 21st, 2011, he was digging with his heavy equipment and hit something that he knew instantly was harder than rock. So long story short, he began to investigate, and they contacted the Royal Tyrrell Museum in Canada, and they came to move the fossil so they could conduct their study. This fossil is so complete that it's better than any other fossil of its type that they found. Many were saying it's the most well-preserved dinosaur fossil ever found. So, of course, they wanted to move it to the museum. But there was a problem with that movement. In fact, I found a video online that demonstrates what happened when they tried to move it. Let's see if we can cue that video up.
The moment has arrived. Take a look. The team will attempt to lift the 15,000-pound block.
Not knowing is the hardest part. Not knowing what it's going to do when it leaves this ground here in the next 5 minutes.
But they're working really carefully, going very slowly, lifting it up. So hopefully all will go well. There we go, come on, baby. Oh! Oh no.
Broke in two. The fossil that was so well preserved, as it began to be moved, they discovered that the structural integrity of the inside had been hollowed out over time. The different minerals had reacted differently over the eons, and it was unable to support the weight. Now, the good news is, I mean, they were able to pull together other pieces of it and do some great things. But I found it fascinating that something that was so hard and solid on the outside, when the pressure point came, it caved because it was hollowed on the inside. Perhaps we could say it this way. It doesn't matter how the outside looks if it's hollow in the heart. If it's hollow in the heart. And this is exactly the thread that Jesus is beginning to weave through these four illustrations of taking the commandments to a deeper level. See, we've heard before, you know, if you've been in church circles, you've heard this stuff before, right? You know, murder, anger, adultery, lust, like you hear that, and oh, it's deeper, it's about the heart. But what I found so fascinating is that Jesus understands that when we begin to engage in some of these activities at the heart level, we may still maintain clean hands, but we become more and more hollow inside. And I have good news for you. Jesus wants more for you than a hollow heart. He wants better for you. He wants greater for you. He wants a stronger existence for you. Take a look at these three categories here. The first one, murder. He says that to be angry with your brother without cause, to harbor bitterness, we could say, extrapolating. He says that it's like you've murdered him. The command is do not murder. But here's the core. If you're taking notes, you can write this down. The core idea here, this is about honoring your neighbor. See, consider this for a minute. At the essence of murder is not just the taking of a life physically, but it's the disregarding of a life spiritually. You don't murder someone that you hold in high esteem and value. Something has to happen in order for you to devalue them enough that you're willing to take their life. And I know crimes of passion and all that, but it's ultimately an issue of devaluing the life of another person. What Jesus is saying is that when we begin to harbor anger in our heart towards someone else, especially if it's unjustified, that is devaluing that person in our eyes. It's dishonoring them. And Jesus is really serious about this, right? And in fact, he gives these two specific illustrations. He says that if you are at church, right, if you're coming to worship God and you remember that your brother has something against you, you remember that there's a relationship that is wrong, that you are not honoring someone else, he says, forget the worship service, man. Go make it right. That's how important this is. He gives this other illustration. He talks about getting reconciled on the way to go into court, right? He gives this whole illustration about reaching a settlement because he says if you don't, watch this is in verse 26. He says if you haven't settled this thing, if you haven't found a way to honor your neighbor even when you disagree, he says, I assure you, you will never get out of prison until you have paid the last penny. See, Jesus knows that if you are a person or if I am a person who is harboring anger in my heart towards my fellow man, that has a way of festering inside and creating a prison of bitterness and resentment. And Jesus knows that will hollow out your heart because it doesn't matter how the outside looks. If it's hollow in your heart, don't let your heart get hollow. He moves on. He gives these next two illustrations, and I think they really can come together, actually. He talks about the act of adultery as being bound up with the attitude of lust. But then he goes on and he talks about adultery. And again, we see these specific commands. Don't commit adultery. Don't lust after someone in your heart. And don't divorce unless there's sexual immorality. And even then, you don't have to divorce, but you're allowed to. But here's the core of this idea. Because again, we could go on a whole thing and say, well, don't do those things. Okay, great, thanks. There's another commandment to follow. But look at the heart of this. The core of what Jesus is saying is this is about honoring your covenant. Honoring your covenant. Next slide, please. See, Jesus is talking about this idea that covenant matters. Not just what you do on the outside, but how you devote yourself on the inside. Earlier this evening, I had a privilege of going to a wedding ceremony. It was the shortest wedding ceremony I've ever been to. 9 minutes. That's amazing. It's pretty good considering that I had to get here. So the wedding started at 4. Actually started at 4:15 or 4:16. It was done by 4:30. I hopped on the road and came here. But it was so cool to see this young couple, my wife's cousin and his girlfriend's fiance, exchanging their vows, making these commitments to one another. And I thought about how, even in my own life, the pull of the tide of selfishness is there. Never goes away. Those of you that have been married any length of time, those of you that have had any long-term relationships, really of any kind, over time, the tide keeps pulling at you. It never goes away, does it? There's hopefully growth and there's strength and we get better at it. But what Jesus is saying is, hey, don't let your heart drift into selfishness, worried about what's in it for me. How does this affect my life? What do I want? Don't let your heart drift into selfishness instead of selflessness. Because when you do, you find yourself hollowed out and you know never know what sort of breakage can happen with that. How serious is he? Well, he gives that great example. If your eye causes you to sin, every good commentator I've ever read very thankfully comments that he's using an illustration and he's not saying be literal. How many are glad that we don't literally have to cut our hands off and gouge our eyes out, right? Yeah, amen. But he's using this big, bold, disturbing language to make the point. What is his point? Why is he making such a big deal out of these inner realities, because he knows that no matter how the outside looks, it doesn't matter if it's hollow in the heart. So don't let your heart get hollow. He gives one final illustration for us to explore tonight, and this is in Matthew 5, 33 through 37. This is the one that he says, don't swear, don't make oaths. What's the big deal? Like, have you ever been in a moment when you were having a passionate discussion with someone and you really wanted them to believe you? So you said something like, seriously, as God is my witness, this, or swear to God, or swear on a stack of Bibles, or on my mother's grave, or like, right? Have you ever done that? I've totally done that. Like, you know, kids do these things like, you know, pinky promises or I don't even remember. It's been that long, right? Double cross and hope to die. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Boy, that sounds like I would cry. Okay. What Jesus is saying here, he says, look, I get that you want to make a big deal that you're really telling the truth. But he's saying, consider this. Next slide. This is about honoring your word and your limitations. See, as I was reading and studying this, one of the commentators pointed out that this idea that you would swear by heaven or swear by earth or swear by Jerusalem or swear by your own head, it's kind of this descending order of priority, right? Like if I swear by heaven, I'm kind of bound. But if I swear by my own head, like, you know, I'm kind of bound, but maybe kind of not. It's about giving yourself wiggle room, right? And so what Jesus is saying is, look, don't if you're going to make a promise, don't give yourself an out clause. Don't be the kind of person that has to qualify your commitments because people know that if you don't, you won't keep them. Jesus is saying that not only that, but you have limitations, man. And he goes on to say, like, you can't even make your hair change color. Now, I know we live in a day when you can get really cool chemicals, right? And you can dye them, do all kind of things. My wife loves to she's loved to change her hair color over the years. I've known her as a blonde. I've known her as a brunette. I've known her as a pink-headed person. We weren't together then. Just saying. But that's cool. That's cool. I think she had purple once. It looked really good. But that's not what he's saying. He's saying you don't have the control to change the actual pigment of your skin, of your hair, of your eyes. You can't do that just by your will. He's saying you don't have the control to have any effect on the city of Jerusalem, much less the whole earth, much less heaven. He's saying, look, be the kind of person that you know your limitations and others know your word is good. And why is he making such a big deal over it? Because he knows that if we're the kind of people that have to keep convincing people that we're honest, that's not just a symptom of our actions. That's a symptom of something wrong with our heart. And Jesus knows that it doesn't matter how the outside looks if it's hollow in the heart. So don't let your heart get hollow. Get hollow. A while ago, I took my son out in nature. This was a big deal for us because we're not really nature-y people. We're inside people. In fact, my son said once, I don't really play outside that much. I'm kind of a house boy. I found amusing. But I took him out one time, and we decided we were going to go and explore the woods. And we came across this little ravine, and we just kind of scrambled down in it. And then I was going to climb up the other side. And I put my foot out, and I saw this really nice log that was going to support my weight. So I put my foot out, and I put my weight on it. And the fact that I'm sharing the story, you should be guessing what's about to happen. It didn't work. I put my foot on this log that looked so sturdy, and it crumbled beneath my foot. And it's not because I'm a particularly big guy. It's because something had happened on the inside of the log that I didn't notice from the outside until the pressure came. And it was a symptom of this. You can see it on the screen. It's called heart rot. And I found this interesting report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture called, here's the title, it's you know, they must have some really good title writers here, Wood Decay in Living and Dead Trees, a Pictorial Overview. Ooh, that's a headline that'll sell. But it was an interesting commentary. Like, it's a 30-page document. No, I did not read the whole thing. I just looked at the pictures. But here's a couple of them, right? You can see on the left that this tree, from the outside, you would never know anything was wrong, but on the inside, it's beginning to decay. The picture on the right goes even further. The inside is gone. And I wonder if maybe what Jesus is saying in all this is that he wants you and me to have a life marked by much more than surface level obedience to God's commands. He wants us to have the kind of inner strength and inner peace that comes from a heart that's solid and secure in him. I wonder if maybe what Jesus is saying is that all these heart conditions, right? This issue with anger, this issue with lust, this issue with honesty, these issues with honoring your neighbor, with honoring your covenant, with honoring your word and your limitations. Perhaps what he's saying to us is that these heart conditions will hollow out your life if you let them live until there's nothing left but the brittle morality of rule-based religion. And that kind of life will always be prone to snap when the pressure comes. And Jesus wants more for you than that. He wants better for you than that. He knows that inner peace is found when we live our lives within the bounds of God's commands, not just with our hands, but with our hearts, truly desiring to follow where Jesus leads us, not because we have to, but because we get to. That's how we actually apply these words. Maybe you've heard this before, Proverbs 4:23. It says this, "Guard your heart above all else, for it is the source of life." Jesus is giving us a deeper way to live and follow these commands, this law that is existing. And it's a way that doesn't just make us look right on the outside, but it helps us grow stronger on the inside as we learn to let go of anger, to say no to lust, to be true to our commitments and our limitations. And that's the kind of life that makes us stronger. So don't let your heart get hollow, because it doesn't matter how the outside looks if it's hollow in the heart. And when God's people truly begin to live with strong, secure, healthy, whole hearts, that kind of people living that kind of life, well, that could start a revolution.
Hi friends, Pastor Philip here, and thanks for joining us today. If you've been blessed, we'd love to know. Please leave a review on iTunes or Facebook, or email us at connect@outpostchurch.org. Also, if you'd like to contribute to this ministry, you can send a text message with any amount to 84321, or just visit outpostchurch.org/give. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.